As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to the Saturday Slammin' Jam, hosted by Andrew Schlecht with Alex Spears.
How about we can just watch basketball?
That's a man's jam!
I like that idea.
Live from Oklahoma.
Click, click.
With questions and participants from all around the world.
Anthony Edwards!
Put that on a poster!
Whether you're flipping your flapjacks, tending to your yard, or just sipping your coffee, get ready, sit back, relax. It's the Saturday Slammin' Jam.
Fact is, I missed this shot. I'll walk away. I'm still a chump.
Here's Andrew.
Welcome to the Saturday Slammin' Jam. I'm your host, Andrew Schlecht. Go to theathletic.com/NBA show and get The Athletic for 30% off an annual subscription. I've got my guy, Alex Spears, with me. Al, tell us what happened in the NBA this week.
Well, Andrew, it all started on Friday night when the Phoenix Suns beat the New York Knicks 118-97. The Suns continued their no-loss November while the Knicks and Tom Thibodeau finally decided that something had to change after the Knicks' up-and-down start to the season. Unbeknownst to us at the time, the Suns game would be Kemba Walker's last game with the Knicks for the foreseeable future, as Tibbs announced on Monday that Walker would be out of the Knicks' rotation as of right now. While you don't want to blame one guy, Kemba did play a role in the Knicks starting out with the 20th-ranked defense and one of the worst starting lineups in the league. On Saturday night, the Minnesota Timberwolves squeaked out a 121-120 double overtime victory over the Philadelphia 76ers, who welcomed Joel Embiid back after a COVID absence. Since I complained about the Wolves and not knowing whether to buy into this team or blow it all up, they have gone 7-2 and are now firmly in the playoff mix. Perhaps that early season defense was real, as the Wolves are currently the 8th-ranked defense in the league. On Sunday night, we had the rematch of LeBron James and Isaiah Stewart. Would there be another kerfuffle? Well, if your definition of kerfuffle is a preseason championship favorite narrowly beating a 4-win team despite all three of their stars putting up great stats, then yes, there was a kerfuffle. On Monday night, the New Orleans Pelicans dominated the Los Angeles Clippers 123-104. The story of the night, and dare I say the season, Andrew, was Jonas Valanciunas, a man who just last week you poo-pooed. You said, why'd they extend him? He hasn't even played with Zion. Well, Andrew, they extended him. They extended him because he is the greatest shooter of his generation, okay? Jonas had 39 points in the game, including 7 of 7 from 3. We are all thrilled at Slam and Jam for Big Science, one of his nicknames, according to Basketball Reference. Go Big Science. On Tuesday night, it was the game of the year so far, the 18-2 Golden State Warriors versus the 17-3 Phoenix Suns. Despite losing All-Star Devin Booker during the game, the Suns put up one of the best defensive performances we've seen against the Warriors in their impressive 104-96 win. As I record on Thursday night, the Suns are on a 17-game winning streak with another Friday night marquee matchup against the Warriors. On Wednesday night, the Houston Rockets defeated the Oklahoma City Thunder for their 4th win in a row, bringing Houston's record to 5-16. Steven Silas finally heard the cries of Rockets fans and myself begging for him to stop playing the double big lineup with Christian Wood and Daniel Tice. Unfortunately, the fight for more Şengün minutes continues, as he did not top 17 minutes in any game during their four-game winning streak. Finally, on Thursday night, history was made. The Memphis Grizzlies beat the Oklahoma City Thunder 152-79, setting the all-time record for largest deficit in NBA history. But I will note, they were not doubled up, Andrew. A small victory Thunder fans can take. It has still only happened once in NBA history, so that's something we can hold on to. What a week it was, Andrew.
What a week. Wow. And I wanted to zoom back a little bit. And a few weeks ago, I talked about 10 games in, what do the title contenders look like, and what kind of records do typical title contenders have. And so I wanted to look at the same stats, but 20 games in, just to see how different they were. And so I went back all the way to the 2001 NBA Finals and got the finals candidates from every single year. So give me, so it's 20 years. We got 42 total teams. How many of those, Alex, do you think were below 500?
And how many teams is it total? That's 40 teams?
42 teams.
42. Below 500, I'm going to say six.
The answer is zero. None were ever below 500.
Wow.
So if your team is below 500 right now, I don't care if it's injury related, whatever it is, there is no precedent in the last 20 years for you to reach the NBA Finals. 20 games in, below 500. It has not happened in the last 20 years. Now,
so the Kings, we can rule out the Kings?
Kings, you're toast. Mm. You're out of here. Mm. Okay?
Mm-hmm. That's rough.
So what about 500? How many teams do you think were at 500, 10 and 10, at the 20-game mark?
Well, since it was zero for below 500, I'm actually going to go lower this time, so I'm going to say three.
It was two. There were two teams in the past 20 years that were at 500 that reached the NBA Finals. It's the 2006 Miami Heat, who changed coaches after 21 games, actually. That's when Pat Riley took over the coaching duties in Miami. And then the 2005 Pistons actually started 10-10 that season. And they struggled with injuries. It was kind of a strange start where like Ben Wallace was in and out of the lineup for them. And I think Chauncey Billups missed some time. Smush Parker actually started a game for that Detroit Pistons team, which I just didn't remember at all. So just kind of a weird start for them. They did eventually make it to the NBA Finals. Now, there's only one team that went undefeated in the past 20 years. It was the 2016 Golden State Warriors. The average team that makes it to the NBA Finals, 20 games in, has 14 wins. So 14-6 is the average, is what is average for teams that reach the NBA Finals 20 games in. So teams that are around that right now, the Nets, the Chicago Bulls, of course the Suns and the Warriors and the Utah Jazz, those are what the average NBA Finals team looks like. Now you have some of these outliers here, like the two that I mentioned. The 2007 Cavs were 12-8. The 2008 Lakers were 12-8. But most of the time we're looking at teams that are 16-4. The Golden State Warriors in 15 were 18-2. Now, the Suns of last year are another exception, and also the Bucks are as well. The Suns of last season were almost a team that was at 500 to start their season. They were 11-9, and they eventually got things together, and the Bucks were 12-8. So if your team has that record, there's a ton of historical precedent actually in the past 20 years for your team to still be able to get to the NBA Finals. But not below 500. So if your team is below 500 at the 20-game mark, history says you're not going to the finals.
Well, that'll be depressing to some Pacers fans out there, some Raptors fans. I mean,
Philly is one right now. And Philly, like, you can talk about injuries, you can talk about whatever. you know.
Yeah, I was going to say the most interesting one based on that would be the Sixers, because you can imagine a scenario where they made a trade, they boosted their roster, and all of a sudden they're back up, you know, as a top three seed.
Yeah. And the one that was interesting is like the Lakers, because everybody wants to talk about the Lakers. Well, the Lakers at the 20 game mark were at 500, and there is historical precedent for a team to struggle out of the gate, need to make some changes, whether that be a coaching change or whatever it is, and still be able to get it together. And now this would be the first LeBron James team. We talked about LeBron being a team that was at 500 after 10 games. This would be the first time that LeBron James would be at 500 and then take his team to the NBA Finals after 20 games. So LeBron's never done this before. This has never happened to any of his teams that have gone to the Finals.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, we'll see what happens. But with their roster construction, it's hard to figure out what deals you could do, because basically the package is THT, Kendrick Nunn, and a future first. That would be like the best thing they could put forward, most likely, to actually get someone.
Yeah. Who knows?
But on the other hand, like, you know, they're going to do something. They're not just going to stand
GM pat. LeBron never sits on his hands, dude. Never does.
That's right. Okay. I wanted to talk, Andrew, about players I was wrong about at least 20 games into this season. And last week, we talked about Tyrese Maxey a lot in our Slammies. And so I'm not going to talk about Tyrese Maxey today, but I am naming the list, the Slam and Jam official Tyrese Maxey top five players I was wrong about list, so that you know he is still included there. I'm still thinking about Tyrese Maxey, but he's not on the list. And by the way, like, these are not necessarily players that I voiced my negative thoughts about. Okay, so I'm being very vulnerable here by telling you dumb thoughts I had in the past. Okay? So respect that. Okay, so here we go. Number five, player I was wrong about. I mentioned him earlier, Jonas Valanciunas. I'm putting him number five because I already liked him. He was great for Memphis. And while maybe he wasn't, quote, arguably the best player on the Grizzlies last year, as everyone wanted to say this summer, he was legitimately good and a helpful player to them. I even liked the Pelicans trade for him this summer. And while I shared some of your concerns about the extension, I came around to the idea that it's a perfectly reasonable, movable contract for a quality center. So why is he even on this list? Because after seeing how he's played this year, I'm wondering if it might actually work with Zion. Because the discussion point after the trade and extension was, well, Jonas will stretch the floor more than Adams, which was technically true, but also massively overstated Jonas's three-point prowess up to that point in his career. He averaged less than a three per game for Memphis. Technically more than Steven Adams, but also nothing to get that excited about. But he has tripled his attempts per game this season, now averaging over 2.5 threes per game, and he's shooting 48.4% on threes, best in the NBA. Number one. Now, is that sustainable? Probably not. But what if Jonas continues to increase his three-point shooting and he turns into a big that shoots, let's say, 38% on 3 to 4 attempts per game? Is that crazy? Does that change how you feel about a future front court combination with him and Zion? Maybe not. Maybe you say, hey, the defense is still going to be an issue. But honestly, that's going to be true until Zion starts playing defense. Yeah. Offensively, though, I've gone from, this probably won't work, but hey, it's a reasonable contract, to now I'm like, you know what? Maybe this could work. Maybe. I'd at least like to see it. And that tiny shift in my thinking is why Jonas Valanciunas is the number five player I was wrong about.
Okay. You just got to get me to the four attempts first before I can buy into it. Like, get me there.
Well, I mean, he shot 7 in that game.
I know. 2.5 to 4 is a big jump. Like, just get me there.
Okay. So it is 2.6, to be clear. So he's above 2.5. Okay. Number four. Now, this is the only one where the player is actually performing below my expectations, but I thought it was worth mentioning with how much we talked about him on the show over this last year. It is DeAnthony Melton.
Yeah.
I was really expecting a jump for Melton this year. It felt like everything was in place for a breakout year. He was moved into the starting lineup in the preseason and in the early season. He actually started out the season with a 20 and 22 point game back to back. It was happening, Andrew. But since then, He has taken a backseat to other players on the Grizz, and it now seems like Desmond Bane is going to be the Grizz who has that breakout season.
Yep.
He lost his starting job, and his minutes have gradually come down to where he's now commonly playing less than 20 minutes per game. I still want to believe, Andrew, he had a great game against OKC's backups, if that means anything to you. But I can't ignore how rough the early season has been for him. Last year, the Grizz were a plus six when Melton was on the court, best on the team among their high-minute guys. This year, as of Thursday night, of course, this might have dramatically changed after the Thunder game.
Yep.
But prior to the Thunder game, the Grizz were a minus 3.1 when Melton was on the court. The breakout has at the very least been delayed, Andrew, and that is why he's my number four player I was wrong about. Are you as upset about that?
He
did a lot of Melton talk. He did a lot of Melton talk.
I like him still. I'm still in.
Okay, good. My number three player I was wrong about. This one pains me, Andrew. Ricky Rubio. Because I've always liked Rubio, but I have to admit that I gave up on him last year. I thought the Rubio train had run its course. And in my defense, it was partly because I wasn't watching a ton of Wolves games in the second half of last year when he actually started to rebound from what was an awful start to the season. If you just look at his stats from that season with the Wolves last year, he had career lows in shots per game, points per game, only shot 31% from three. I thought he was done, Andrew. So when the Cavs traded for him on draft night, I did not get it. I was not a fan. Even after he looked awesome in the Olympics, it didn't convince me. Despite that, I still made the Cavs over my signature take, which is looking awesome. I am so smart. But who knew that Rubio would be a big part of the reason why I'd be feeling so confident about that over in December? Rubio was solid before Colin Sexton went down for the year, but now he's even more important and he's absolutely stepping up. Among the Cavs' key players, the Cavs are a plus 7.8 when Rubio is on the court, by far the best mark on the team. He's had games where he's provided scoring when it's needed. He's had five games scoring 20 or more points, which he only did four times all of last season with the Wolves. He's still a great playmaker. He's obviously a defensive upgrade over Sexton. I wish I had never doubted him because he continues to be a high-quality vet in this league and one of the reasons why I will never shut up about the Cavs the rest of the season. And that is why he is my number three player I was wrong about. All right, number two. I'm interested what you think about this.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm going to start by saying that I blame you personally for this.
Oh, wow. Okay. Wow.
It is Cole Anthony. Now.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know that Cole was not a favorite of yours going into last year's draft. And based on his year at UNC, that opinion justified.
Yeah.
Even after his rookie season, where he put up some decent stats on a terrible Magic team, I was still on your side. Yeah, maybe he sticks in the league as an inefficient off-the-bench microwave scorer, but that's probably the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
20 games into the season, and I feel like I need to readjust how I think about Cole Anthony.
Yeah,
his shot profile has changed. He's now taking 46% of his shots from three compared to 31% last year. And he was shooting close to 40% before a recent stretch brought him down to 36%. His playmaking...
Still good, though. Like, that's still fine.
Still good.
Acceptable.
Still good. His playmaking has also improved. He's increased his assist percentage from 24.6 to 30% and is now averaging around six assists per game. And outside of his improved play on the court, I've just become a huge fan of Cole as a personality in this league. He has added a vocal, engaging personality to a franchise that desperately needed one.
Yeah.
And listen, maybe he does end up as a microwave scorer off the bench, but that now feels like the floor for him, and I'm much more intrigued than I previously was about what his ceiling could be. Mm-hmm. And that is why he's number two player I was most wrong about.
I would put myself in that category too. Like, I'm
okay.
Dead wrong about Cole Anthony. He has shown a lot. Like, he and has led them to wins too. Like, he's not just putting up these stats losing by 75 to the Grizzlies. He's doing this and winning games.
So was that a shot at the Anthony Melton?
Big shouts. Yeah, that's
wow.
Big shouts to Cole Anthony. Yeah.
Okay, my number one player that I was wrong about. Interested to hear what you think about this. Kyle Kuzma. Now, here's what I'm going to say. So there's a much-discussed phenomenon where young guys on the Lakers become overrated in the public consciousness simply because they're on the Lakers. You would agree with this?
Sure.
The Lakers, they soak up a lot of TV time. They're a constant focus of social media posts from the major sports outlets. As a result of all this attention, the average role player on the Lakers is more recognizable than most second or third starters on your average NBA team. But because everyone believes this phenomenon is real, Andrew, I am starting to wonder if it actually works in the opposite way. We are anticipating that every young Lakers player is going to be overrated, and so we actually end up underrating them. Brandon Ingram, Lonzo Ball, Alex Caruso, Kyle Kuzma, all guys who I would say were probably underrated by the majority of NBA fans when they played for the Lakers, because we were sick of hearing about them, and who are all now crucial pieces on their respective teams. Alex Caruso, I think, might be the best example, because while there were certainly very smart people pointing out how good he was defensively while on the Lakers, I remember way more tweets complaining about how much coverage he got on social media, and now it's just kind of accepted that Alex Caruso is one of the best perimeter defenders in the NBA and that the Lakers made a huge mistake. And I think the same thing happened with me and Kuzma, because I was so convinced Kuzma was overrated that I laughed at the idea the Lakers would ever get something significant for him in a trade when they were talking about trading him for a different piece last year. Mm-hmm. I agreed with the report that came out last year where an anonymous executive called him the most overrated player in the league. And it's not even that I suddenly think he's some amazing player that was being held back in LA. Statistically, he looks pretty similar to what he did as a Laker outside of his rebounding, which has taken a significant jump. Yeah. It's more that now that he's outside of LA, my previous opinion was so low, likely due to like a reverse Lakers bump phenomenon. I feel like I'm finally properly rating Kyle Kuzma in my head, and that is why he is my number one player I was wrong about.
Wow. I didn't know you had so much Kuzma hate in your heart.
It wasn't even... I just completely discounted him as an NBA player.
He was good. He was good. Like, the Lakers miss him.
I mean,
he was good for them.
But wouldn't you agree that, like, yes, he was very... I think he was pretty good in the bubble during their championship run. But last year, like, the way people thought about him, like, it went off a cliff, it feels like.
Yeah, maybe.
And his value took a significant hit among how, you know, just like the NBA consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now you look at what he's doing for the Wiz, and it's like, oh, I mean, this guy is like a solid, good rotation player for a good team.
He's good.
Which, to be fair, like, that's what he was in L.A. But I and it's my fault, Andrew.
It's all your fault.
I thought of him lower.
Well, speaking of good, we're about to have a really good guest.
What a transition!
Sam Vecenie is going to join us. We're talking rookies, a really fun rookie class, and the expert on all of these guys right after this quick break.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, Al, this week we are not turning to the Wheel of Fandom. We're not yet going to talk about the Charlotte Hornets. That will be next week. For this week, I just wanted to bring on one of my favorite people in the NBA circle. It's my guy, Sam Vecenie. We love talking rookies. We love talking draft. And we're going to talk about this rookie class who They've been spectacular. They've been really fun. Sam, how are you? I'm so glad that you're back on Slam and Jam, man.
Well, guys, you know, on this night of mourning for the Oklahoma City Thunder, I'm just glad to be here with my Thunder family and get to talk some hoops. Go Tigers.
Go Tigers. Oh, man. Oh, what a night. What a night. We're recording this on Thursday night. The Thunder just absolutely got dismantled. And I'm just glad that Josh Giddey did not have to participate in any of it, which is just, we had to protect him from that debacle that
happened
in Memphis
tonight.
Protect
my dear sweet Australian boy, please.
Yes. Oh, what a great guy. Let's talk more positive. Let's bring ourselves back up from the black eye of the NBA and talk about Evan Mobley. So Evan Mobley looks like the closest thing to a franchise-changing player so far. You have him first overall in your rookie rankings, and while most had him rank high going into the draft, there were some question marks. How has Mobley answered some of those pre-draft concerns for people that had those about him?
Yeah, very interesting question. So I think that the number one thing that Mobley has answered is just simply how he would manage the physicality of the NBA. That was absolutely the number one thing that people were worried about. How long would it take Evan Mobley to be able to withstand the rigors night in, night out of the league? And look, we're talking, I think they've played 22 or 23 games so far into the season. And we're not going to get a full picture of that until probably 2 years, 3 years down the line with Mobley, because injuries do rack up. He's already been hurt. He sprained his elbow, if I remember correctly. Not a serious injury, but with guys that are skinny and guys that do, just with the way that they play, embrace physical contact, right? Because he is constantly contesting around the basket. He is constantly getting banged into taking contested rebounds. I think that we're going to have to see how that goes. But I will say defensively, I have not seen a better rookie in the time that I've been covering the NBA. I've been doing this professionally, let's say, for 8 years. Never seen a better rookie who has entered the league more ready to defend on every single front, from pick and roll defense to help defense to weak side rim protection to, you know, just being out in space, closing out under control, being able to slide and cut off an attacked closeout. Like, every single thing, he's ticked every box defensively, and he's completely changed the way that the Cavaliers are able to operate defensively. Because if you guys remember, I mean, this has been a historically bad defense for the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. A historically bad defense. Like, that can't be emphasized enough. And it's not just him that is fixing it. Jared Allen has been pretty good defensively this year. I'm not like quite as high on Jared Allen defensively as some people are, but the ability to keep 2 7-footers on the court at once, while also having one of them that is as mobile as he is and able to fly around and help defense and able to contest and switch on the perimeter, I think that it has completely transformed the way the Cavaliers operate.
Yeah. I wanted to shift to Scottie Barnes, because in the pre-draft process, his scoring ability or lack thereof was a major discussion point. And while he's cooled off a little bit since returning from...
By me, particularly.
I didn't want to bring it up, but it's true.
No level score, zero level score.
Yeah,
that's right. I honestly will say, at Florida State and throughout high school, that man could not score.
And while he has cooled off a little bit since returning from injury, he's definitely showed more than most were expecting. Based on what you've seen so far, how much would your evaluation of him change if you just knew that he was this far along in terms of his scoring ability?
He would be a... Yeah, look, I love Jalen Suggs. I'd probably have to take him at 2.
Really?
Or I'd probably have to take Scotty at three. I'm sorry. I would still, for what it's worth, take Cade Cunningham at number one, even over Evan Mobley. Okay. But if we knew that Scotty was going to be this far along as a scorer, and look, like, I talked to the guys that trained him pre-draft, and they told me, like, you know, he looks really good. He comes in, he does the work. Like, we're really working on the jump shot. It looks great. You know, you never know until you see it in game action in the preseason and at summer league. It wasn't really there. I think that he made like 33% of his shots outside of 10 feet in those settings still. And so far, I mean, look, you look at his last six games. I mean, I think he's made like 50% of his threes. And look, I think that that's probably unsustainable for where he's at right now, but it's not unsustainable for the future, probably. Like, he's probably going to shoot at some point. And if you could have guaranteed for me that Scotty Barnes was going to shoot pre-draft, mm-hmm. yeah, I think that I'd have taken him at number three.
Wow.
I think that he does everything else. He's a great defender. Right. He's a great transition player because he's really unselfish. He's the ultimate teammate, just like elite character, human being. If you would have told me that guy can shoot, yeah, I'd buy him at three for sure.
Are there any other players in this class who, similar to Scotty, have shown a skill set in the early going that wasn't really present on their college tape?
Oh, man, that's a good question. Now I need to pull up a list of guys because I feel like there probably are on some level.
I mean, I know you've been surprised by Wagner.
Yeah. You know, Mo's probably a little bit farther along as a shooter than what he was at Michigan, I would say. But mm-hmm. that was always a potential outcome, for sure. Mm-hmm. Great, great question here. Is there anyone that's, like, really, truly stood out? I will say, like, you know, just taking it to the Thunder, I thought that Jeremiah Robinson Earl would be able to defend, and I thought he'd be a really smart positional defender. I didn't think he'd be this comfortable switching as early as he is. And I think that's actually like a big reason why he's been as effective as he's been so far. I would say that that's probably one, Jeremiah Robinson Earl being able to switch as comfortably as he has been able to switch. Mm-hmm. You know, here's the thing, like, we talk about how strong the draft class has been, and I think that the six best guys, so Josh Giddey, Cade Cunningham, Evan Mobley, Chris Duarte, Franz Wagner, and Scotty Barnes is the sixth. Those guys have all been outstanding so far. Alperen Şengün in limited minutes has been pretty good. I would like to see him continue to get a bigger role. I don't think the rest of this rookie class has been amazing outside of that. Like, we're seeing some guys like Jeremiah Robinson Earl, Austin Reeves, Ayo Dosunmu be able to handle like 10 minutes a night, 15 minutes a night, and not like fuck up while they're out there, which is good. Mm-hmm. But beyond those guys, like, it hasn't been like a incredible rookie class. It's just that that group of six has been so unbelievable to start, I think.
Yeah. We got to get Steven Silas to, like, not despise the minutes that Şengün's playing out there. I was up close, like, right next to Steven Silas all last night during the Thunder Rockets game. And the anguish on his face watching Şengün defend was just as entertaining as the game, because like he just couldn't stand it. Like, he wanted to get him out of there as fast as possible, like on like the first defensive possession. Like, he just has no patience for him whatsoever.
And look, like, Alperen is not a good defender right now. Like,
no, he's really not.
Call that for what it is. Yeah. But also, like, they're fucking terrible. Like, play that kid minutes, sir. Yeah. Play that kid.
Yeah, get him some. He needs reps. He's got obvious skill. I mean, he was doing some stuff last night that was really fun, and just needs the reps. Especially, I mean, you're playing the Thunder. Like, give the guy some reps. I mean, come on.
Completely agree.
Yeah. Okay. So, Cade Cunningham, you mentioned that you would still take him number one overall. What are your thoughts on his season? Has he met your expectations for what you thought he would look like as a pro? He's kind of had up and down, but most of that's been injury related. But like lately, what have your thoughts been on him?
I think everything outside of the shooting has translated even better than what I thought it would. He is a legit plus defender already. He's a leader out there. He is their best communicator out there. You look at the handle, I think the handle has translated even better than what we could have anticipated. Over the last, you know, 2.5 weeks, he's gotten the turnover problem like under control a little bit more. Like, I think we all thought the turnovers would probably be a thing this year with Cade and that he'd figure it out over the next 3-4 years, as opposed to like throughout the course of his rookie year. He's gotten better with them, like over the course of what he's played, probably 15 games so far. It's just the shooting that hasn't been there yet. And all of the evidence is that Cade Cunningham is going to shoot at some point. He just hasn't made shots yet in a small sample. So I think once the shot falls, it's going to look pretty damn good. I have not seen, if you're a believer that shooting sizes and small sample shooting issues aren't a concern, and that you're willing to evaluate guys that you think are good shooters over the course of a larger sample, I've seen nothing to dissuade me from thinking that Cade Cunningham is a franchise centerpiece. It just might take a little time with the shot.
You mentioned in your rookie rankings that one of your early season wins in terms of pre-draft rankings is Herb Jones, who's starting for the Pelicans. As of Thursday night, the Pelicans have a positive net rating when he is on the court, which is something you cannot say about any other Pelican. Why has his game translated so quickly to the NBA?
Two things. First, he is a really smart basketball player and like a really mature human being in general. Like those are the two things. Like, he was emotionally mature and ready to play in the NBA from day one. That was arguably the biggest reason why I had a first round grade on him. Like, I just knew from talking to people around the Alabama program, from talking to people around Herb Jones, that like, he's an elite, elite, elite character, human being, above all, first and foremost. And those guys that are emotionally mature, that have been around the block, they tend to be the ones that translate early. Number two, he's just a high level defender on a team that desperately needs defense. They really, really, really need guys who can step in, defend at a high level from day one, and take on multiple different assignments while also being in the right position in terms of help defense. I think that what he's been able to do on that end particularly, he's not as effective and doesn't impact the game as much as Evan Mobley does, because there's just more space for someone like Evan Mobley, who's 7 foot tall and block shots and is a legitimate impediment out there. But in terms of performing his role, I don't think they could ask for anything more from him defensively. Like, I think he's been a legit plus defender as a rookie. And if you look at his season defensively, even compared to like some of the best defenders in the NBA, I mean, it's not been that different so far. Like, he's a really, really high-level defender.
Yeah, he's been super impressive. Let's go to some lightning round questions, Sam. So
that sounds
among
like
the
something
rookies,
that I'm capable of, let me tell you.
Yeah. among the rookies that you were personally high on going into the draft, who has been the biggest disappointment so far?
Probably Jalen Suggs, honestly. I thought he'd be a little bit more ready in terms of his handle. His handle just has not been good enough so far. It's a little too loose. I think he's a little bit too casual. Over the course of the last 10 games, as opposed to his first 10 games, I think it's gotten a lot better. But I would say Jalen Suggs. I thought Jalen Suggs would be more ready. He is impacting the game defensively, but it's offensively, it's been a slog so far.
What about which rookie do you think is being utilized the worst by their team? Either because of scheme or playing time?
Alperen Şengün. I would like to see him play.
I agree.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I don't know that like any rookie is being under or like utilized poorly, I would say right now. Like it feels like the guys that are getting more minutes than they should, like Jalen Green, like is getting the minutes because he's a top five pick. And again, they're bad. So why not give him the minutes? I don't know. What would you guys say to that? I'd honestly be really, really interested to hear that.
Oh, I've been complaining about Şengün for weeks now. And they finally moved away from the double big lineup with Christian Wood and Daniel Theis. And Theis seemed to be out of the lineup completely. So I was like, okay, finally, they're going to play Şengün like 25, 30 minutes a night.
Right.
And over these last couple games, he in this winning streak, when they've won four in a row, the most minutes he's played is 17. And it's just like, what are we doing? Come on. I understand that Silas like wants to win because they were 1-16 at one point. But still, like, I feel like he could be something really important for this team going forward. And I feel like you have to start figuring that out now because they're going to be adding draft picks in the future. They have a lot coming in. So he would definitely be mine.
Well, and as you guys know, as well as anyone, they used two first round picks on him, not just
one. That's true.
Because they traded with the Thunder to get that 16th pick and moved, what was it, like, they moved two future firsts, actually, is what it was.
Two future firsts.
I agree with you guys. You know, I will say, you mentioned one rookie that's surprised, and I know I'm kind of going off on a tangent here. BJ Boston, I think, might be the biggest surprise of any rookie in the league, and it's mostly because of what he's done in the G League. He probably should be playing, like, legitimate minutes for the Clippers right now. Like, not just, like, you know, toss him some minutes here and there. I mean, he just dropped like 46 in the G League earlier this week. His jumper looks awesome. He still has some defensive warts to work out. And I think that they're a team that like really obviously is hanging their hat on their defense. But him being as ready as he is, I think, to maybe play NBA minutes, I think that's maybe my biggest surprise so far.
Yeah. I think also another answer, and I hate to just like make this Rockets-centric, but I just would like to see Garuba out there and not Daniel Theis for the Rockets. You know, it kind of feels like, what are we doing here with like the massive amount of Daniel Theis minutes for them?
Yeah, look, I think Garuba is ready to play defense in the NBA right now, which is the whole reason that you have Daniel Theis on the roster to begin with.
Right.
I don't know. Like, I get wanting to have an adult in the room. I get having someone mature in the room, which I'm a bit skeptical on in terms of their other veteran big man, given that he specifically called out like needing the ball more after one of their losses, Christian Wood, I'm talking about. Like, I think that there have been some not great signals there in terms of effort and in terms of like desire.
Oh, he mailed the entire game, and he got hurt last night. But before he got hurt, he had zero interest in playing basketball last night. Like none.
Yeah.
He just didn't even, he didn't even come near the ball during his like 9 minutes he was on the court. It was kind of astounding.
Yeah. Like in that vein, I get wanting to have an adult in the room with Daniel Theis.
Sure.
But you're right. Like I'd like to see Garuba as well.
Yeah. Overall, that's a hard question because like you look up and down the draft and it's like, who else? Like Josh Primo's not going to play. There's not really room for Book Knight or tons of minutes for Zaire Williams. Like Corey Kispert got, I think Corey Kispert maybe is one that you could think of, but there's like such a squeeze up forward now in Washington that it like makes sense that he doesn't play.
And they're good.
A ton too. For them. Like, yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah. Like Kai Jones, Jalen Johnson, Keon Johnson, Isaiah Jackson, like all not ready. Like that, like those are okay that they're not getting a lot of minutes. Okay, so you released a rookie ranking about 2 weeks ago. Which player do you think is most likely to crack your ranking that didn't make the first ranking?
I'll say this. Like, I think that in the minutes that Jonathan Kuminga has played so far for the Warriors, he's been good. It's just that like they don't really have the minutes. Like they want to play the vets and they're loaded across the wing. Like, but again, like it's opportunity. Like, will he actually crack the rankings? I don't know. But I think he's been pretty okay in the minutes he's played. That's a good one too. I mean, it might honestly be BJ Boston. Like, if BJ Boston starts playing and he plays the way that he's looked in the G League so far, I think that that's a potential answer. Charles Bassey wasn't terrible in the minutes he played for the 76ers for a little stretch there. I'm trying to
have you watched much of Trey Mann?
I haven't yet. No. Has it been okay?
He's been really competing defensively, which has been, that was the thing that I just didn't think he would do.
Yeah. He was a nightmare on defense at Florida.
Yeah. Mark Degnault just won't let him play unless he competes on defense and he'll pull him if he doesn't. And he's been, like, to his credit, has given a ton of effort on that end. And, you know, like, his thing is, like, create space, you know, he can go get his, he can finish at the rim. And now he's kind of adding that element there. And so he's at least interesting. He's not been efficient, but he's at least kind of interesting.
Well, one other guy, you know, that now has the third highest plus minus in a single game in NBA history. Santi Aldama just went for
Santi Aldama.
Tonight.
No.
Shouts to Santi Aldama. I applaud that mention. I love that.
I don't know if you guys know who Jim Root is. He covers college basketball. He's part of the three-man weave. Jim and I, like, we gamble on college basketball and we'll text back and forth. Santi Aldama and the Loyola Maryland Greyhounds were our ticket to riches over the last couple of years when Santi was in the lineup. We have an immense fandom of Santi. So I'm excited. I'm excited for this moment.
Okay. Our last question for you, if you could take any rookie in this draft and magically put them on a different team right now, who would you choose and what team would you put them on?
Honestly, I might move Chris Duarte to Dallas.
Hmm.
Because I think that they could use another, like, high level two-way guard shot creator, sort of, but, like, more than that, a guy who could really shoot the ball and who is, like, ready to play, obviously, from the jump. I think that if Chris Duarte was on Dallas or a team like Dallas, you know, with a great centralized ball handler, that would be, I think that'd be amazing. I would be all in on that.
Yeah, that's a great answer. I like that.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you for answering our question, Sam, but it is now time to play Andrew versus the Beat, our weekly quiz show, trivia show, where Andrew goes head-to-head with a beat writer, although I feel like it hasn't been a beat writer in a while. This week, Sam Vecini, host of the Game Theory Podcast. Now, just last week, frequent Game Theory guest Matt Penny came on here and beat Andrew 4-1. Could Sam make it 2 weeks in a row for the Game Theory podcast over Slam and Jam? So all these questions this week are about this rookie class and what they've done so far this season. I've come up with 8 questions. Sam, you're going to give me a number between 1 and 8. It'll correspond to a question. If you get it right, you'll get 2 points. If you get it wrong, Andrew, I have a chance to steal for 1. We'll go back and forth until all the questions have been asked and answered. Where would you like to start, Sam? Number between 1 and 8. Question number 6. Which rookie has taken the most shots in a single game with 24.
Chris Duarte?
That is incorrect. Andrew, you have a chance to steal. Most shots in a single game this season with 24.
Is this Jalen Green?
Jalen Green? That's a good guess, but no, it's Franz Wagner.
That was honestly going to be my second guess, because was it earlier this week?
I think it was.
Yeah, I remember. I was talking about this game with Penny on the most recent podcast, where like at the end of the game, he was kind of just getting shots up.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, Andrew. Score is tied. Where would you like to go next?
Number one.
Number one. Among rookies who have played at least 200 minutes, only one has a true shooting percentage over 60%. Name that player. So it should be easy, Andrew.
Is this... I don't think this is right. Is this JRE?
JRE, that is incorrect. Sam, you have a chance to steal for 1 point. Any guesses?
True shooting over 60.
True shooting, gosh, who in that over 60.
The problem is I have a name in my mind.
Yes,
I don't
it.
Think he's played 200 minutes yet, though.
Hmm.
I'm going to go Şengün.
Şengün, Alperen Şengün. That is also incorrect. I told you guys before that this was, I thought it might be the easiest week of trivia. I lied, apparently. This is really hard.
Hard.
The correct answer, would you believe? Austin Reeves. Austin Reeves, the only player.
I was going to say Bassey.
Yeah, Bassey.
Bassey, yeah, I think he was up there. Okay, Sam, here we go.
Number seven.
Question number seven. Which 2021 lottery pick has played the fewest number of minutes so far this season?
Zaire Williams.
Zaire Williams. That is incorrect. Andrew, you have a chance to steal.
Is this Book Knight?
It is James Book Knight. Right. Would you believe he has only played 12 minutes so far this season?
Wow.
All right, Andrew. You're in the lead. We're on the board, 1-0. Here we go.
I should have taken much more time with that. That's bad.
Number two.
Question number two.
I'm lighting a candle in here. This is about to be a blowout.
All right. Number two, Andrew. Which rookie has committed the most fouls so far this season?
Oh my!
Most fouls. So they got to play a lot of minutes.
Play a lot of minutes.
And that's about the only thing you can think of.
It's the only qualifier given.
So big minute rookie. Here we go.
Is this Jeremiah Robinson Earl? I'm just going to keep guessing him, and it's going to be wrong every time.
And it's still wrong. Sam, you have a chance to steal. Not necessarily a bad thing. No, it is not Scotty Barnes. It is none other than positive net rating Herb Jones.
And I was going to guess him. That. Dang it.
You were. Yeah, right, Andrew. You were going to guess him. Liar. Okay, Sam, back to you. You're only down by one.
All right, we're going top row. We're going number three. Bottom row failed me. I'm going top row.
Among all rookies, there is only one non-first rounder in the top 10 for three-pointers made. Name that player. So among all the rookies, there is a top 10 of three-pointers made. 9 of the 10 are first-round picks. Only one of them is not a first rounder. Who is it?
Austin Reeves?
Honestly, probably would be the answer if he hadn't gotten hurt, but that is incorrect. Andrew, you have a chance to steal.
Do it again, Andrew.
I don't want to guess his name again. Gosh, that's the only one that sticks out of my head in the second round that like plays. Like, who else is playing? It's like Herb's like the guy that's playing just a crap ton, but I don't like he didn't take threes. I guess I'm gonna do it again and be wrong again. Jeremiah Robinson Earl.
Third time? Wow. Third time in a row, but this time it's correct, Andrew.
Yeah, that was my second name too.
I was like, that has to be it, but I don't want to guess it again and be wrong. Just can't do that again.
All right, Andrew, given the way this game has gone so far, you have a commanding 2-point lead.
Number four.
Where would you like to go next?
Number four.
Question number four.
Oh, my.
Okay. You'd be a fool, Andrew, to not know that Josh Giddey leads all rookies in assists with 116. Yep. But do you know who is number two in assists among rookies with 76 as of Thursday night?
Is this Davion?
It is Davion Mitchell in second place. Okay, Sam.
It's down to him and Jalen Suggs on that. I was hoping that you would guess one of those two and I'd be able to guess the other. But
now, Sam, it may seem like there's an insurmountable lead, but I'll let you know that one of these last two questions, you can get a possible 3 points.
Oh.
So there's still a chance to tie here.
Let's go number eight.
And that is the one. There are only three rookies who have played in every game for their team this season. Name them all. I'm going to give you 1 point per correct answer. So there's only three of them, rookies who have played in every single game for their team this season.
This is oddly specific.
And this is as of Thursday, not tonight, which is Thursday. So, okay.
Yeah, did something happen tonight?
Well, I just know that Giddey didn't play tonight.
Oh, right.
He didn't play. Last night either.
Yeah.
Oh, Andrew giving out hints to his competitor. Yeah.
My kids were so disappointed. My kids went they've been to a Thunder game before, but they're just huge Josh Giddey fans. They were so sad that Josh wasn't playing last night.
Support the brand.
That's right.
Okay, my first guess is going to be Jalen Green.
Jalen Green's out right now. Yeah, he twisted his, does he have an ankle? I think he has an ankle.
Yeah, I've not paid attention to the Rockets the last, like,
As you shouldn't. What does he have? Jalen Green itching to return to Rockets lineup from injury. Yeah, he's been out for a couple games. He actually been out during their, he has a hamstring injury. He's been out during their winning streak.
Yeah.
Interestingly. Okay, Andrew, you have a chance here to really put up a dominating score, a la the Grizzlies defeating the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Yeah, you need this tonight, Andrew.
Give this to
Sam
him.
Playing the role of the tanking Oklahoma City Thunder.
Franz Wagner?
Franz is one.
That's going to be my second one. Damn. Do it again, Andrew.
Davion
is one. Can you get the third one? Rookie who has played in every game for their team this season. Tough.
It feels like a lot of the high-profile guys have gotten hurt, at least some.
That is true.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of running through. I was like, man, it's none of the top five guys, I don't think.
I feel like Duarte missed. It's not Duarte. I know that's not true, so I'm not going to say that.
He missed. Yeah, Duarte missed games. Andrew.
I'm not. Well, you got my Jeremiah Robinson Earl.
Yeah, come on. Put it on the board.
Okay, that actually, no, that's not right. But is that not right?
Is it not?
Did
he not play?
Man, that is right. Oh,
boom.
Man.
Wait, did we have a Quizmaster mistake again?
Shut up, Sam. Cut the pod.
Yes.
No.
Yeah, I thought about that for a second. I was like, I think that is right. I'm pretty sure he has played in every game.
Okay, but in one game I'm seeing here, he only played 5 minutes, so I was basically right. The other name was Delano Banton.
Oh, okay.
That was going to be my big surprise, but Banton's it was ruined. All right, Andrew, last question. You get first dibs.
Okay.
Which rookie is the current leader for most free throws in a single game with 12? And there's a little nugget about this night that it's not... Well, it could be a nugget. I'm not saying nugget because it is a nugget. I'm just saying there's a nugget about this game that I think you'll find very interesting and would probably give it away if I said it.
It's not Bones Highland, is it?
It's not. Again, I did not say nugget purposely.
Okay.
Apparently it led you down that road. Okay, Sam, you can get on the board. If you can tell me which rookie, current leader for most free throws in a single game with 12, and I'm going to do you one better. Actually, I'm not. If you want to know the secret special nugget, I will give you a half point if you get it right.
Yeah, give me the secret special
nugget. Okay, the secret special nugget is that He did this in only 16 minutes of play. Only 16 minutes.
Wow.
Attempted 12 free throws.
It's like a Hackershack situation. That's wild.
That, I don't know how that helps.
That would have actually made me want to guess Bones Highland more.
Really?
Yeah, honestly.
All right, let me look this up, make sure it actually happened. Yes, it did happen.
In 16 minutes, 12 or 12 free throws.
16 minutes, 26 seconds. Okay, I'll give you a quarter point. Do you want me to tell you how many they made?
No.
Okay, Sam's sticking with
demand,
the half point.
I demand my half.
Quarter point.
You know what? No. Just for the bit to continue, yes, give me the hint.
In 16 minutes, this player went 5 of 12 from the free throw line. Yikes.
5 of 12. Now, Şengün?
Oh, and he gets it! Sam is on the board with a quarter point!
I really wanted the quarter.
Final.
Now when you guys tweet this out, you get to say... What, like 6-1/4 point? It's going to be a bit. It's
yes,
a
the final bit. Score, 7-1/4 point.
Quarter point.
Dominating victory.
Oh, man. All right, Sam, I can't let you go without giving some sort of like Josh Giddy take before you go, because I think our Thunder fans will just die if they go through a pod listening to you and not hearing you say at least like two sentences about Josh Giddy.
Yeah, I love him unconditionally. Like, he is one of my non-existent children. He is realistically though, like, Josh's feel for the game is absolutely outstanding. The shooting has cooled off, right? Like, that's the number one thing. Like, he started out, he's shooting like 35%. It felt like NBA teams were like, oh, it's the white dude who can probably shoot. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, when you were in AAU or whatever, right? Like, oh, the white dude on the court's probably the shooter, so we got to get out on him, right? It felt like there was some of that in the NBA early on, where they were like, okay, we got to get out on him. We got to make sure that, you know, we're stopping him from shooting, and he was spacing the floor a little bit just through that presence, right? Now that the shooting has fallen off a little bit and there's a bit of a sample, it feels like teams are playing off of him a little bit more, and he's having to adjust. And I think that he's... outside of the shot not going in, and me still thinking that he needs to continue developing as a shooter, I think that he's adjusted to that pretty well. Like, all of the field game, all the passing stuff, like, it's all there. He is still going to be a phenomenal, like, third guy to have out on the court, fourth guy to have out on the court, in my opinion, which is kind of where I always saw him. If the shot comes along, things could be a bit different. Like, that could legitimately shift some things. Like, if he gets to the point where he could be a knockdown pull-up shooter somehow, I don't know that I see it. I think that his gather just takes a long time. Mm-hmm. I think that, like, you know, he just doesn't look super comfortable with it yet. I don't see it personally, but I think he is going to get there off the catch.
Yeah.
And as long as he gets there off the catch... he's a long-term starting caliber player in today's NBA who I think legitimately really helps teams win.
Yeah.
And I also, like, I don't know if Jeremiah Robinson Earl is a starter, but I think that he's the kind of guy off the bench that really helps you win games.
Yeah. Yeah. And both just delightful people.
Except when they lose by 75.
Except for tonight. In Memphis. Specifically that time. Sam, thanks so much for coming on the show. If you're not listening to the Game Theory Pod, you need to be, because it will make you a smarter NBA observer and NBA draft observer. So please go check that out. Sam, thanks so much for coming on.
Of course, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Sam Vecenie for joining us on today's pod. I want to read some Apple Podcast reviews before we go. Remember, if you leave us a review and you put Slam and Jam in the title or talk about Slam and Jam somewhere, I will read it live on the podcast. So here is our first one. It's from Nick Name For Real. And it says, Saturday Slam and Jam, a pod of their word. It says, Dear Alex, us Wizards fans have heard your remorse and regret in picking the Cavaliers over the Wizards as your surprise breakout team, and we forgive you.
Oh my gosh, wow.
And appreciate that you would actually own up to your prediction and even remind us listeners how you doubled down on it the following week. Kudos to you, sir.
I will place you
back in the good graces of the Wizards faithful. You may now enjoy as many Kyle Kuzma sweaters and goofy turnovers as you like. Thumbs up.
Wow, that listener is going to love my number one on players I was most wrong about.
Gonna absolutely love it. This next one comes from Andrew McCarty. And Andrew says, Pacers week on SSJ! Exclamation point. Since the Wheel of Fandom debuted, I've been waiting for the Pacers week to review Andrew and Alex's fantastic work on the Saturday Slam and Jam. I love how they persistently highlighted every team like few NBA sources do. The weekly trivia is intriguing, and Andrew's journey from doormat to dominant has been epic. The September segment on Joel Foulkes was so interesting that I bothered two friends until they listened to it and texted me their thoughts. Hands down, my favorite pod on the Athletic's great network. Thank you so much for leaving these reviews. Again, if you leave a review, we will read it live on the podcast. Hope you guys have a great, great weekend. We'll be back next week. We're talking Charlotte Hornets next week. And we will talk to you guys then.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.